Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. It is great to have you with us. Jazz musician John Raymond started out playing piano, but it didn't take long for him to find his true love, the trumpet. The Minnesota native credits his two elementary school band directors with inspiring him to pursue music, and he still keeps in contact with them. Minnesota may seem like an unusual place for a jazz musician to hail from, but Raymond says that as he's getting older, he's seeing more of his Midwestern roots coming out in his music. He makes his home now in New York, but he's back for a visit on tour with his Roots Trio. Raymond will play at the Jazz Estate this Friday at 9:30. WUWM At Night's Rachel Owens spoke with Raymond about his career, working with jazz legends like trumpet player John Faddis and drummer Billy Hart, and about his Midwestern roots.
I started taking piano when I was in, I think, second grade or something. And when I was in fourth grade, I remember seeing some kind of holiday concert at our elementary school, and one of the sixth grade guys, who I think he was the brother of a fourth grade friend of mine, he was playing with all the faculty musicians at this holiday concert, and he was playing trumpet. And for whatever reason, I don't remember the specifics, I just remember I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I wanted to play trumpet from then on. And here I am now. So, you know, pretty crazy.
We get a lot of people who are singer-songwriters. That's a more typical trajectory, I guess you could say, or the kind of people that we hear about more. So I'm just wondering what that path has been like for you to get to where you are now.
And like I said, I think a lot of it had to do with really great music teachers that were really encouraging and kept pushing me through kind of my middle school and high school years. I ended up going to college at the UW-Eau Claire. So I was there until 2009, and then I've been in New York ever since. It's interesting, even now, I really find that the older I get, the more I'm seeing kind of my Midwest sensibilities or my Midwest roots, if you want to call them that, kind of coming out in my music more. Even though I'm not like a singer-songwriter or a folk singer or something, I feel like I'm starting to really be able to channel it through playing, you know, instrumental jazz, basically.
What influences are there? What do you think it is about your music and your style that is Midwestern?
Something that I tend to equate with the Midwest, or maybe it's just maybe the Minneapolis-Eau Claire connection for me specifically, like music that's very simple in a certain way. I think there's something about Midwest life that's very simple. You're not out to be a big shot, so to say, but you're out to just really live kind of a quality, content life in whatever that looks like. I think oftentimes the music of the Midwest reflects that, and there's a kind of a simplicity and a folkiness to it in that way. And I also just think I still have such a deep affinity for a lot of the musicians that I know in the Twin Cities and in Eau Claire. And I think part of it is that I see those musicians, while a lot of them aren't really known on a national or international level, they make music with such soul and such passion and just a certain depth to their music that, if I'm really honest, I miss out here in New York. I miss some of that substance and some of that heart behind what people are doing. And so it's always really refreshing to come home for me because I feel like I get to interact with people who are just kind of thinking along those lines.
At what point did you start working on your debut album, Strength and Song?
Yeah, I think the first song that I wrote that ended up being on that album was my last year at Eau Claire. So that would have been 2009. But I didn't really start working on it until 2011, which was kind of the tail end of my master's degree, which I got at SUNY Purchase, which is just outside of New York City. And I think we recorded in June 2011, so it would have been just after I graduated. It was kind of music, I think, that had been coming together for those 2 years pretty steadily, and then finally was able to record it then.
And for that album, that was produced by the very well-known trumpeter John Faddis. So how did the two of you get hooked up?
Faddis was actually one of my professors at Purchase. And I only had him for one semester out of the 2 years I was there. But even that semester, we kind of developed a relationship. I think stylistically, Faddis and I are two totally different trumpet players in a certain way. But the one thing that I really appreciated about him was that he always held me to a really high standard. And he always expected a lot of me. And I remember that first semester that I had lessons with him, I brought him some original music of mine that I was planning to record for some competition I was entering or something. And he was like, well, where are you going to record this? And I was like, well, I don't know, you know. And he said, well, how about this? How about we'll go to a really nice studio in New Jersey and, like, I'll basically cover it. It's on me. And I was like, wow, you know, why, you don't need to do this. You hardly even know me, you know. But it was kind of clear to me then that he had some kind of investment in me. So we had gotten done with that project, and I guess it would have been a little over a year later, I kind of asked him if he would produce this album, Strength and Song, and he agreed to, and it was great. He was helpful.
So all along the way, he was keeping you to those high standards.
Yeah, and I think a really good producer on an album, they know that their job isn't really to interject a whole lot. It's just to interject at the right time when they really feel like what they're going to say is going to make the music a lot better. And that's what he did in the studio when we recorded that album. I think that's part of the reason it turned out so well.
And it has received a lot of great praise, and rightfully so. How's it been since that has been released?
Part of my whole motivation for making that album that I just wanted to, like, kind of cement myself a little more in the New York scene and just be able to start playing at some venues that I really wanted to play at and be able to play with musicians that I really wanted to play with. I think when you write music, put a lot of effort into that music, and you're putting a lot of effort into booking shows, at least my experience has been that even the best musicians are really down to work with you because they really see that you're committed and you're devoted to what you're doing. And so I think the past 2 years, just a lot of that. I haven't obviously recorded anything since then until recently. And so it's just kind of been the daily grind, so to say, of continuing to book shows and write music and play with good musicians and keep improving and just keep trying to establish myself in the scene here.
Certainly seems like that work is paying off. Your latest recording session, you worked with legendary drummer Bill Hart, among others.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was life-changing. I mean, Billy is just one of the greatest drummers ever, in my opinion. It was, again, through a producer who produced the album, who was John McNeil, who was actually he's a trumpet player, great trumpet player, and teaches also at NEC in Boston. And John and Billy know each other really well. And so John helped kind of organize that. The experience of playing with Billy, you know, I've been telling people that even just from one note playing with him, I felt like my whole world was kind of turned upside down. And it's really amazing because with people like that, that have been around for, I mean, he's, I think, 73 or 74. He's played with Miles Davis, and he's played with Stan Getz, and he's played with so many different jazz masters. What's so special about playing with Billy is he basically is the jazz tradition that students talk about wanting to learn. And so you're literally playing with somebody who developed what jazz is today. That was just such a special thing. It was a pretty memorable experience for me.
Do you feel like there's that breed of jazz musician, if you will, that's dying out? Or do you feel like the tradition is being pretty well handed down? It's staying alive?
I think it definitely is. I mean, there obviously are fewer and fewer of those musicians of Billy's age and who are just so active in playing. I mean, Billy teaches at three different schools around the country. He tours all the time, all over the world with his band and other bands. And for someone in their mid-70s to be doing that is, I think, pretty rare. But I think there's a lot of really great things happening just in the global jazz scene. You know, the music is evolving, and it's evolving naturally, and I think it will continue to do that just because, I don't know, I think when you get really into jazz, and whether you're a player or a listener, it becomes really contagious. It's very stimulating, both intellectually and emotionally, and there's just a certain specialness to improvising and really what that is at the heart of jazz.
And you're also an educator, so how do you find that teaching music informs your own music?
It does a lot, actually. So I teach at this United Nations International School in New York, which is basically a school for the staff workers and diplomats of the UN. Their kids go to this school. In teaching trumpet lessons at the school, I can think of numerous times over the last few years where just teaching a lesson to someone has, in the same moment, I have this revelation, like, wow, you know, I need to do that myself. You know, there's always the old adage of you best know something when you finally teach it to someone. And I think it's so, so true. It's really helped cement a lot of things that I've learned, just really helped kind of establish it even in my own playing, I think.
I'm interested in your writing process as a composer of music. How does that work for you? Do you play it first and then you get it down?
It works in all ways, I feel like. For example, there was a song that I just recorded with this album that I did with Billy Hart, and I wrote the song solely on trumpet, which I had never done before, actually. And that was a totally new kind of compositional thing for me. And so I basically played this melody and kind of honed in this melody and refined it a little bit. And then I started to hear what chords were coming underneath it as I just kind of sang it to myself and played it to myself. Other times it'll be a certain chord progression or just certain chords that I really like the sound of or the feeling of, and I kind of go with something like that, and one thing just kind of leads to another. I think the one common thread for me with my composing is that I've really learned that singing really helps my composing, because if I'm able to sing the melody, even if it may be more intricate, it really helps me internalize the melody and also just kind of see where it's going to go next. I think a lot of the composition process for me has been having one idea and learning how to develop that idea well. And I think singing has really helped me do that.
And does it change much when you get to the studio, or does it stay pretty much as it is?
I think for the most part it stays as it is. I think the thing that I've been learning a lot recently, just how to arrange a song in a certain way, whether it's with instrumentation or with the form of a song, that can make it really interesting as opposed to just kind of playing the song by itself. Playing the melody, taking solos, and playing the melody again at the end, which is obviously a typical jazz format. So I'm just kind of trying new ways to stretch that aspect of things and try to keep it really fresh and really new for the listener.
And you play both trumpet and flugelhorn. And
yep.
For people who aren't aware, what's the difference between those two instruments?
They play pretty much the exact same. The mouthpiece is just a little bit different than a trumpet mouthpiece. What I often tell people is it's kind of like a mix, sound-wise, it's a mix between a trumpet and a French horn. So it's a little more mellow. Usually when you get up into the higher register with flugelhorn, it gets a little swirly, and it doesn't really want to lock in as much as it does on a trumpet. But in general, it gets a sound that really, in my opinion, really blends with almost anything, because it's very mellow and it's very smooth. It's a very buttery kind of sound.
Do you feel like it's maybe more of a Midwestern instrument than a trumpet?
Well, I mean, maybe in a certain way. And that's kind of why I'm excited to bring this group, this Roots Trio, back to the Midwest for this tour, because I'm playing totally exclusively flugelhorn in this group. And there's something about that feels very rootsy for me and maybe it is a Midwest thing,
Tell me a little bit more about your tour. So as we're speaking this week, you're going to be wrapping it up, I believe, here in Milwaukee.
Yep, we're playing at the Jazz Estate Friday, the 19th, 9:30 p.m. And the group is a really interesting group that I've only worked with probably in the last 9 months or so. The instrumentation is flugelhorn, guitar, and drums. And so there's no bass player, which is pretty atypical for jazz ensembles. And it also features two other really great rising star New York musicians here that are good friends of mine. Gilad Hexelman on guitar, who's from Tel Aviv, Israel, and Colin Stranahan, who is a drummer from Denver, Colorado.
Have you played much in Milwaukee?
I never have, actually. Mm. This will be my first time. I know a handful of musicians that play there and live there now, but have never made it over.
I'm always curious, especially since you're coming from the Midwest, what musicians' opinions are of the jazz scene in the Midwest, and I've heard more city-based. What's your opinion?
That's a good question. Yeah, I definitely think it depends on location. I mean, it depends on if there are venues that support jazz and are centered on jazz. And even, for example, with Minneapolis and St. Paul, they unfortunately had a really legendary club that had been around for a long time close at the end of 2014, and that was the Artist Quarter. And since the Artist Quarter has been gone, I know it's been pretty tough for Minneapolis musicians because they haven't really had many outlets to play, and really there hasn't really been a venue totally committed to presenting jazz music in kind of a listening format. And so I think, I think it depends. I think it depends on the city. It depends on the musicians. I know for a fact that there's really, really great musicians pretty much in all pockets of the country and of the world. And so, I think they're all there. I think it's just a matter of having a place for them to be heard.
So when can we expect your next album to come out? Sometime in 2015?
Yeah. I'm currently shopping the album around to some jazz labels and kind of waiting to hear back and find the right fit. And once I do, probably will release that album in, I would guess, maybe May or June of 2015. And along with this tour that we're doing with the Roots Trio, we're actually going to be recording during the tour, two days of recording in Minneapolis. So I'm not exactly sure when that'll be released either, but I would guess maybe a year from now, so maybe the fall of 2015.
Well, we certainly look forward to that. John Raymond, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show today, and we look forward to seeing you at the Jazz Estate this Friday.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Jazz trumpeter and Minnesota native John Raymond spoke with WUWM At Night's Rachel Owens. His Roots Trio performs this Friday evening at the Jazz Estate, located on the east side. Curtain is at 9:30. And that's all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North, thanking you again, as always, for tuning in. We're looking forward to having you join us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from listener-supported 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.